This is Matt Stryker, and you're listening to yet another wrestling podcast. Gosh, when are these things going to go away?
And so that's when I said that Doink the Clown is actually the king of all clowns. Like, he is better than It. He's better than Homie the Clown. So in my...
I don't know. No, do you really think people are going to want to listen to this? I don't know.
I mean, top 10 clowns. He's definitely number one. It's Doink.
That's debatable.
Regular Doink, not evil Doink.
You got Dink, Pink, Link, and I don't even know if there was a stink in there, but somebody.
This is stinking right now, so.
It's time for another wrestling podcast with your hosts, Steve Credo and Jonathan Benjamin.
So begins yet another wrestling podcast. And joining us from the last house on the left, he is one of the co-hosts, Jonathan Benjamin.
Hey, thank you very much. It's like, I can't believe we're on already episode number two. So thanks for joining us on iTunes, whatever you're listening to us on. And I can't do this by myself. As always, my co-host, my partner in crime, Mr. Steve Credo.
That's right. That's right. I go by many names. Steve Credo, Steve Credo, whatever you guys want to call me. I am the Mark of Marks. We're doing this podcast because we love wrestling. We love talking about wrestling. Love anything to do about wrestling. We're not wrestlers, but we sure do love pro wrestling, don't we, JB?
Absolutely. And, you know, really who wins in all this is you guys, because you get to listen to us talk about nonsense for just forever. And you know, we're very appreciative that you're here. We hope you tell your friends, and I hope that you just keep listening.
That's right, because I mean, we're playing everywhere now, JB. We're on iTunes, we're on Stitcher. You can like us on Facebook at Another Wrestling Podcast, and you can follow us on Twitter at
A Wrestling Pod.
That's A Wrestling POD, because
we didn't even rehearse that. That's good.
We're getting the flow down on episode two, brother. This is episode two of Another Wrestling Podcast. And man, JB, I think basically we got to get through to everybody is that we're not going to talk about Raw. We're not going to talk about SmackDown. We're not going to talk about Impact. If you want to recaps of the show, just watch it on DVR. Go read it in the dirt sheets. We're not interested in giving you a recap of what you just saw. You should realize what you just saw, right?
Absolutely. You can find that on another wrestling podcast. We're just another wrestling podcast.
That's it. So we got some other stuff to go. We're going to be bringing on superstars, bringing on managers, bringing on talent. We want to talk to them, ask them questions, and we're also going to give our two cents about other little topics we want to talk about, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Now, Credo, correct me if I'm wrong, but this weekend, whenever I was slaving at a job, not the job squad, but I was at work this weekend. You were in the smallest state in the union.
That's it, man. Warwick, Rhode Island, baby. I was in Warwick, Rhode Island for the New England Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame and Fan Fest brought to you by Joseph Bruin, who I can't praise enough for throwing this event for all the marks out there. It was a great weekend, and unfortunately, I got to enjoy it and you didn't.
Well, I don't think that you're that sad about that, because you kept telling me. I'm pretty sure the first text I got from you said, "I'm literally eating breakfast with Tito Santana. What are you doing?" So I don't think you were that torn up about it.
I'm sorry. I don't know what's great about staying in a hotel full of wrestlers is that I could just mark out over the simplest things. And yeah, that's right. I texted you. I sat down. I had my buffet. Joey Styles was in there. Then I think he realized that all the marks could go eat there too, so he left. But then I sat down. Tito Santana came in. Nicole Bass came in. Bushwhacker Luke came in. It was great. It was like I'm eating with the stars here of yesterday. And
my big question for you is, did Tito Santana in fact eat a breakfast burrito?
He was eating the breakfast quesadilla. He would always say arriba right after each bite. So I mean, he was selling the gimmick even at breakfast.
That's amazing.
But no, man, it was a good day. It was a good weekend. I've never gone to this event. This is my first time out there. And, hey, I'm going to be there next year, and you better go out there next year with me, because, I mean, two of us out there is probably going to be better than one, so.
Well, I have had the great opportunity to listen to some of these interviews that we've gotten from last weekend. So, you know what? I think your fans are in for a real treat this week, and I think that we're going to get right into some of the things that we learned from all these wrestlers this week at the NEPW Hall of Fame.
Yeah, and let me explain what I did. So basically, what we're gonna do I'm gonna play the audio on the show right now. We're gonna go over what I did with all the superstars there this weekend, but we're also gonna release the video on our Facebook/ All Pro. I don't even know our show. Another Wrestling Podcast. Facebook.com/AnotherWrestlingPodcast.
Well, we had two good shows. That's it.
But here's the thing. This is what I did. Since I was the one-man band this weekend, I have a GoPro camera, I had a book bag, and I had a microphone. So what I did is I hooked my GoPro camera up on my book bag, and then, you know, I was with my microphone asking them questions. And what I didn't realize is that I really couldn't tell if the camera was level or whatnot. So, it was a pain in the butt, but it worked out good. But I'm controlling the damn camera with my iPhone. So I have one hand a microphone and my questions that I want to ask. And my other hand, I have my iPhone so I can see what the camera looks like. And so I'm juggling all these things for a few questions. So I come off stupid sometimes with these questions because I'm just looking at my camera, my phone, and trying to make sure that the video's okay. And long story short, it's not okay because I didn't realize it's not level when it's sitting on your shoulder. So all the videos that you guys are going to see on the website, they're kind of crooked a little bit. But that's the reason and explanation why. So when you're watching these videos,
you don't have to explain anything to these people, all right?
I need to put this across because that's my day job. I do this thing for a living. And
well, don't quit your day job.
No. So, but anyway, it was a great time. First up, I want to get into my little interview I did with Big Bully Busick. Do you know who this guy is, Jonathan? I'm sure you do. Come on.
Oh, absolutely.
A bully.
He was a jobber, basically.
Talent enhancer. Let's get to it.
Yeah, well, he was. He had his manager was Harvey Whippleman. I mean, and basically, the only thing that I remember about Big Bully Busick was his look.
He had that vintage classic like fighter look. If you want to get into a fight on the street, he put his dukes up, and you know he had a cigar, his mustache, which was pretty much his trademark, and his little beanie hat he had wearing. But let's get into this. I asked him a question. I asked him, how does it feel that the WWE named Big Bully as having the number one rated mustache in the top 10 mustaches ever in the history of the WWE?
Well, how about that? That is just absolutely amazing. But I think what's more amazing is it took a lady to pick it out. So you never know what a mustache ride could do. You know what I mean?
Big Bully with the mustache ride comment, Jonathan.
Well, I mean, I guess that right now, from this point forward, we are no longer radio PG because I wasn't expecting that. I'll be honest with you.
Speaking of beards, and Jonathan, you know about these beards because you're growing this tamed beast on your face as it is. I asked him, is the stash greater than the beard?
Absolutely. I mean, it takes a select few. You got Ox Baker, Rick Rude, Steiners. You know, to grow a stash is an art. You got to know how to do it.
It is an art to grow these things on your face, right, guys? I mean, we've come across mustaches and goatees in your day and some beards. It is an art. For being a man, it is an art. What do you think, JB, right?
You know, I was about to get really upset with him because I'm not sold on the fact that mustaches are better than beards, but the fact that he mentioned Ravishing Rick Rude, he's still okay. He's still all right in my book.
Well, if you had to pick who had the best stash up till today or beard or whatever, who would you pick? Anybody come to mind?
Oh, absolutely. Like I just said, Ravishing Rick Rude, as far as facial hair goes, it was the world's most perfect mustache.
Well, there you go. That's another wrestling shirt if I've ever heard one. The world's most perfect mustache.
Yes.
But anyway, I try to ask some stupid questions with all these guys this weekend, and some basic general questions. I also asked him, you know, being a legend, who would you love to have faced if given the chance in today's wrestling landscape?
There's a host of things. Host of wrestlers out there that just fly all over the place. I kind of like the big guys, and some of the bigger guys are starting to come back. So it'd be a great choice, but I'd have to think about that one.
So, you know, a basic general answer from the bully. You know, I like to throw these questions out there because I'm kind of curious if, you know, some of the legends of yesterday still kind of, you know, watch what's going on today. But I also asked them, you know, with today's current product, you know, is there something that they wish they would do more or less of?
You have a host of things going on. Certainly the WWE is got a product out there that's second to none. And when you look at the talent today that they're having, these guys work so hard for the fans that it's just the fans are just they love the fans, and it's great to be out there. Independent, you see a lot of independent shows coming back through, starting to weed out the people that belong and the people that don't belong. There's a lot of guys out there wrestling that have no business in the ring, and there's a lot of guys that are working their way up through.
Yeah, I mean, he said it right there. I mean, there's a lot of guys in the business that just don't belong today, and I don't know how you feel about that one, but I agree with him wholeheartedly, 100%, that, you know, a lot of guys just, you know, they see it on TV, they're like, I could do that, and, you know, they can't do that, and some of them are just bodybuilders that go in there, they can't, you know, they can't cut a promo to save their life, they can't do what it takes to be a wrestler, and it's totally a different landscape, right, Jonathan, today? I mean, I don't know how to put it from yesterday and today.
Well, I think that back then, people like Big Bully, like we said, he was basically kind of enhancement talent. And nowadays, you don't have a lot of that. You don't have these people that are basically nameless and faceless that come up through the ranks. So everybody's going against everybody. And so you have people like Zack Ryder, who is what probably back then would have been considered enhancement talent, that is now going against people like Rusev or whatever. So everybody's kind of famous. Whereas back then, you had to work really hard to become, you know, well known. The one thing that I would like to say is that I think that if I had to put Big Bully against somebody just for shits and giggles, I think I would really like to see Bully go against Luke Harper, and I would like to see Luke Harper kick his mustache off his face.
Hey now, the Big Bully could still hold his own, and it would be good to see maybe a one last kind of a match, but I think he's already had that, and he's well past that. But I did ask Big Bully what he was up to today, in today's day and age.
I have a nutrition company. We feature protein bars. It's BigBullyNutrition.com, and we invite you to visit it. Also, if it's in time, the discount code is FanFest for all the wrestling fans on your site and everything, so come on by and take a look at it.
So if you guys want to check out BigBullyNutrition.com. I want to thank Big Bully for joining us and allowing the time that he did. But we didn't just end there, JB. I kept moving right along, and moving right along I did. And
are we gonna just graze over the fact that the person that you want to buy nutrition bars from is Big Bully Busick? Is that, like, we're not really even going to talk about that?
Hey, man, they were pretty good, too, I'll tell you that. He was giving some away that day, and they were good. They were good. Well, I mean, if I was working out, I need some protein, and I got it right there. And who else, if you were Mark, working out, what else are you going to eat? You're going to eat Big Bully's protein bar, and that doesn't even sound like it should. But, I mean, Big Bully Nutrition, man. I'm going to buy some. I don't know about you. Right there, I feel like he's a sponsor of today's show. That's how.
Well, I'll let you. You know, you can keep Big Bully's protein. I'm gonna stick with something else.
Oh man, but anyway, Big Bully Busick, we appreciate your time. But I kept making my way around FanFest 4, and next person I met up with was none other than a Tough Enough winner, Daniel Pewter. Do you remember Daniel?
Yes, I do. He was literally probably one of the first people that I thought, you know what, he's decent, but he kind of got on my nerves, just his look. He kind of reminded me a little bit of like Tito Ortiz.
Yeah, I see that, yeah.
And I never really got into this guy.
But he was a great guy, though. Great day all weekend, you know. He was happy to be with the fans, happy to talk to everybody. And I gave him some hard-hitting questions, Jonathan. You ready?
Yes.
What's tougher, MMA or pro wrestling?
You know what? It's different. I mean, pro wrestling, MMA, I started off with amateur wrestling. To be able to go into a ring and wrestle and beat somebody up, it's pretty tough because you got hard training partners. But then on the flip side, to do pro wrestling and go from a legit MMA fighter to a pro wrestler, it was even tougher. It's the exact opposite. And then I got to cut promos. And I never did cutting promos or talked or whatever in MMA. So each one of them is tough in its own world, I would have to say, for different reasons, and they're equally as tough.
Well, there you go. The little question of which is tougher, MMA or pro wrestling. And going into this, honestly, I knew Daniel Pewter, but I don't remember everything they did back then on Tough Enough. All I remember is kind of like the last season with Steve Austin and then kind of what they did with NXT and their little Tough Enough thing. Like, you know. So going into this interview, I had no idea or remember what the hell they even did on there back then. And do you even remember like some of the stuff they had to do for Tough Enough?
Yeah, I mean, for the most part, there really wasn't. I mean, it wasn't like they do now. Like, there wasn't the stuff where they bring them on TV. And they really just had a lot of the trainers come in, and they really kind of just talked to them. But if you think about the first season, you had people like Christopher Nowinski and Maven and Nydia. But his season, actually, I'm pretty sure, and somebody will definitely let me know whenever they listen to this.
Fact checker.
But he was on season 4.
Yep.
And he was on with Nick Mitchell, The Miz, Ryan Reeves, which, for those of you who don't know, that is Ryback. So he had a pretty good class that he was with. And the fact that he won over The Miz and over Marty Wright, who was actually in there as well, was the boogeyman. So he won and then nothing really happened, similar to the latest Tough Enough.
Yeah, I have a whole bone to pick with this Tough Enough stuff, and we'll get into that later. But I agree, is that your winners never end up being any a part of the show than anybody else is. And it baffles me to where, what's the whole point of winning if you're never really going to use your winners at all? But I did want to bring out the next question because we're talking Tough Enough. I asked him, and like I said, going into this, I forgot what they did back then compared to now. So I was asking him, you know, does Tough Enough really get you ready for pro wrestling?
You know, I don't know if it starts setting you on the right course. And I think that it's not long enough, you know, with Al Snow being our coach, one of our coaches, and he's the best coach I've ever had for pro wrestling. He's amazing, but they only give us 8 weeks. And I feel that we need more than 8 weeks to really be that superstar. I believe they should bring it back. But the problem is I almost, you know, snapped Kurt Angle's arm. And so poor little Vince is scared that somebody else might snap his superstar's arm. So it is what it is, you know. I mean, Vince didn't know how tough I was. He didn't want me around after I snapped it because I am tougher than all of his guys in the back. But it's okay, you know. I mean, his Olympic gold medalist almost got his arm snapped in half.
He's so soft-spoken that you forget that this guy could literally break your arm in a minute. And, I mean, he was great talking to, and he brought up my next question before I even asked it. Do you remember watching Tough Enough where, you know, I guess Angle was taunting all the guys on Tough Enough? And, you know, to, like, fight him in a match. And if you watch the video, just Google it. Put Daniel Pewter, Kurt Angle, Tough Enough, and you'll see what happens. And he gets him in the Kimura lock. And just watching it, it's like they got to do something. And then Jimmy Cordero steps up, counts the two, and, you know, kind of, like, says his back was pinned while he had Angle on this lock. And that's ballsy, man. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that it's one of those types of situations where Kurt Angle's one of your biggest stars, and if he loses to somebody like this, or, you know, makes him look bad, then that's a terrible thing. So I think they had to. It was pretty much a shoot. So if you watch the clip, you'll see that there was some realness to this season, and I think that could be part of his demise. Why he didn't stick around was because he was you can't really be humble in the locker room after you do something like that to one of the top guys. That would be like if somebody came in and beat the crap out of John Cena in the back of the locker room today, like they wouldn't. Yeah. You know, it's just not good for business.
I hear that, but at the same time, I'm going to argue the point that what he did was to, you know, Angle shouldn't have even tried taunting him. You know what I mean? Like, you're going to step up to this guy and say all the stuff on live national television, and you don't expect him not to do anything back. I mean, granted, this wasn't a match. It was mostly kind of like Angle just taunting these guys, and that's what he did in retaliation. I think right there, man, you sign that guy, you put him on there, that right there is your angle. You have Daniel Puter versus Kurt Angle next pay-per-view or whatever. I would have booked it, but so anyway, like I said, he answered my question already, and so I asked him a little bit more about this whole incident that took place on Tough Enough.
Jimmy screwed me. Jimmy, I'm coming after you. I don't know where you're at. I was nice to you at dinner last night. I'm coming after you, brother. You're going down. Because you screwed me. If you wouldn't have... Nobody told you to tap anybody else out. My back wasn't on the ground. But he screwed me.
I mean, you know, a little comeback for him trying to get a point across that he was screwed. But, hey, it was great television for what it was. But I also, you know, got into the whole point of where's he now? What's he up to? And he does have a book out, My Life, My Power. Here's what he had to say.
My Life, My Power, it's a youth development program. Pretty much every kid, they're not getting the life skills, understand how to goal set, how to build a resume, budgeting, that sort of thing in school. So we're able to do this cross country now. We're in 32 states and 7 countries. And I believe that every kid needs it. For the price that we've been doing it for like $20 a kid in schools, it's so inexpensive. The challenge is kids value a video game or whatever else over really having the core foundation of what they need in life, which it's interesting to see where our values and morals and you know what we're valuing these days. So if any kids out there or parents want us to come to your schools, we can do it. Go to mylifemypower.org.
A lot of these guys are still doing a lot of good outside of the ring. It was great talking to Daniel Puter. Like I said, he was a great guy, great personality, always willing to, you know, hang out with you and talk with you. So I thought he was a good interview. But yeah, you guys, check it out, mylifemypower.org, and you can see what Daniel Puter is up to. But JB, you know who I met next?
I can't wait.
None other than Diana Hart Smith. I'm sorry. I know I'm married, but I still got a little crush on this woman. I remember her back in the day, sitting at Wembley Stadium, you know, always being in the Bulldogs' corner. But she looks fantastic today. I'm sorry. I know I'm a Bret Hart mark. I know I'm a Hart family mark. But I think I still got a little Diana Hart crush in me. I don't know.
Does your heart belong to her?
My heart belongs to Diana Hart Smith. No.
You know, she is. I have to say she's a legitimate 1997 Miss Calgary Stampede. So if you've ever heard anything about the Harts, they have this big fair up there. It's called the Stampede. So I'm sure there was some pretty rough competition, all 17,000 Hart family members going for the title. But she actually won it in 97. So hey, I'm glad to hear that she was still looking good.
Hey, man, she had the sash there and everything. She was all dressed up like it. I don't care. I don't care what anybody says. She looked fantastic, and I love talking to her. I caught her off guard a little bit to ask some of these questions because, like I said, I didn't show anybody my questions before I asked them. I kind of put everybody on the spot. So some of my questions you got to kind of think about going into it. But I wanted to know personally, as a Bret Hart fan, as a Hart Foundation fan, you know, some few things about the Hart family that – maybe might have been said or might not have been said. So I asked her right off the bat, you know, I was, did you have an urge to ever be a pro wrestler? You know, because she grew up in a whole family of pro wrestling. So I don't think she ever wrestled. I mean, she probably came in and did a little altercation here and there, but it wasn't like, hey, I'm in a tag match, I'm wrestling. So I was curious. So I asked her, you know, if she ever had the urge to wrestle.
Yes, I did. I really wanted to. I was good at amateur wrestling, but my mom and my dad really were hoping for something else for me.
So, I mean, I never realized that. I always, you know, I figured growing up in a whole family full of wrestlers, she might have wrestled. So I was curious. I never knew that. I didn't have the time to even Google it, so I figured I'd ask her in person. But, I mean, living in that historic house right above the Hart dungeon, Stu Hart's dungeon down in the basement, I had to ask, you know, how was it being raised living above the dungeon?
I know this might sound sadistic, but I could hear the screaming from, you know, the floor above. Through, you know, it was coming from down in the dungeon. Yeah, it was kind of, again, this sounds sadistic, but I would laugh with my brother Owen about it. We'd hear the screaming, and we would just sort of, I didn't have any idea how, you know, that how grueling it, what must have been for some of these guys, though, because I had my son Harry, Davy Boy Smith Jr., put me in the odd hold, and he's like a master at the submission and the grappling, and just like for 1 second, it's like, ah! So these guys to be wrapped up like pretzels for, you know, the screaming went on for days.
So, I mean, that was kind of interesting. I was curious, you know, if she had any little stories or memories of that. But, hey, that's, you know, her and Owen Hart, you know, listening to the screams, laughing at it. I don't know. I think that's kind of funny. Moving right along, I even asked her about her son, Harry, who is now wrestling as Davy Boy Smith Jr., which I didn't know, which I think is awesome. Nothing like keeping your family within what you're doing, you know? You got that name from who you are, so I asked her a little bit about her son, Harry.
I've always been really proud of Harry, who's now wrestling as Davy Boy Smith Jr.
All right.
And I've always been really proud of how accomplished he is as a wrestler. He has the pure wrestling down to, I mean, he'll always be perfecting it because he's a perfectionist. He'll always be learning. He'll never learn at all. He'll always be just like an artist. And he's a phenomenal technical wrestler. He, for his size, he can move around really well. When he was lighter, he's always been tall, but when he was like 200 pounds at 6'4", he was flying around pretty good, you know, doing like somersaults and really stuff that makes me wince to think of, you know, it's like, oh God, you know, Harry, be careful. But I know Davey would be really proud of him. I've only heard good things about Harry from wrestlers and fans. It means a lot to him that his wrestling is appreciated, and he's wrestling in New Japan right now. Maybe people don't see him as often as when he was in the WWE, but he has plans. He's got a grappling tournament July 4th in Las Vegas, and he was trained by Billy Robinson, the late Billy Robinson, and he's got a real passion for that grappling. May take it to the next level, but right now he's doing his best over in Japan. He's the tag team champion over there for New Japan with Lance, and I think Davey would be really proud. My father would be really proud of him. He gets a lot of encouragement from his uncle Jim the Anvil Neidhart and other uncle Bret Hart. They've been doing appearances and stuff together, and it's really incredible.
Wow, I mean, that's a lot of stuff you just... It's pretty cool to hear from actually his mom, Harry's mom, because you never really hear from the families. You just hear it from them. Like, after they get released, someone will do a shoot interview or whatever. So it's really interesting perspective to hear from there. It is a shame that Harry's dad never really got to see him, the late, great British Bulldog, but... I kind of hearing this really kind of makes me mad. I'm surprised at WWE. Well, I am and I'm not. After all, we have Curtis Axel right now. So I am surprised that they didn't try to play up the fact that he was Harry's or Davy Boy Smith's son more, because they tried to do that whole new generation Hart Foundation, and they had Natalya and they have Tyson Kidd, but then they went with Harry Smith. So I think that it would have been a lot better if they went with Davey Boy Smith Jr.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's if he. I hope he comes back because I mean, he's a pretty big guy. I mean, he could do a lot of stuff, and just to be billed, that's what I think they're doing wrong. They really need to enhance or reinstate the fact that this is the British Bulldog's son. Even like Curtis Axel, like I would have been okay if he was Mr. Perfect, like, you know, following in your father's footsteps. Nothing wrong with that, especially in pro wrestling. It's the gimmick. You can relive it, do stuff that your father did. And, you know, I'm kind of interested. I hope to actually see him back in the WWE. And, you know, I would love seeing him build as Davey Boy Smith Jr. I think that's exactly what he needs right now. And like I said, I put her on the spot with this question, and, you know, it took a little longer of a response, but that's okay because, you know, she let us know some more information, what he's doing in Japan and all that. So it was a good talk. Like I said, once again, Diana Hart Smith, you're okay in my book. All right, and also moving right along, Jonathan, I met up with Taylor Hendricks. You remember her from TNA's Gut Check.
Oh, I remember.
And she's also hot property of Brian Wozniak out there. I mean, he told me to make sure I said hello from him out there. So, Brian, your mission was completed. Taylor said hi to you.
Hi, Brian. This is Taylor. Thank you so much for being a fan of mine. Without people like you, there would be nobody like me. So thank you so much for that. It means a lot to me.
Woz and I have a lot to fight about, and this is going to be another one of those things. It's very rare that I say that, you know, there's a attractive redheaded lady out there. And this is coming from someone with red hair, mind you. But Taylor is one of them.
Well, there you go. Well, I met up with her and I asked her, you know, basically, has your life changed since, you know, getting that spotlight on TNA?
No, I mean, I'm still the same person I always was. So I guess I'm just more thankful now because I get to live my dream every day.
So, I mean, you know, just a basic, simple response. But I didn't know what else to ask at first. So that was my go-to question. But I did find out that Kurt Hennig, Chris Jericho, and Ravishing Rick Rude were her favorite wrestlers growing up, and I, you know, wanted to ask her if she uses anything from them in her wrestling style into her own persona.
Oh, absolutely. Especially with my stuff at Ohio Valley Wrestling, I really had a chance to explore character development in women like Sensational Sherry and Velvet McIntyre. Mixing that with the wrestlers you just mentioned, that was really my inspiration for a lot of the stuff that I had done. So, absolutely.
She absolutely is not what I think of when I think of Kurt Hennig or Chris Jericho or Ravishing Rick Rude, but I've always liked her stuff. I've enjoyed her. I came from a land near where OVW was taped in Indiana, and they came there quite often. So I've actually seen her wrestle live several times. So I was excited to see her get her tryout for TNA, and was a little upset that she wasn't given more chances when she was in TNA.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing. That's the next thing I asked her. I asked her, you know, did she regret her time in TNA? Meaning, you know, did she wish she could have done something else before she left?
Coulda, shoulda, wouldas, I guess. I guess that's the hot question, really. Everybody always wants to ask me about TNA. I don't really think that I have any regrets about it. I mean, it's not anything that I could have done differently. It wasn't the right time for me. I'm thankful for everything that they've given me because it's brought me here today, right? But no, I don't think I actually have any regrets. I just wish that people would be able to see more of what I could do.
I wish I could see more of what she could do, too.
Well, then, this isn't your daddy's podcast.
No, it's not.
Well, all in all, you know, I asked her also, I was like, with the likes of Paige, Charlotte, Gail Kim, Velvet Sky, just to name a few, there's many other great women wrestlers out there, and it seems like women's wrestling is back on the upswing. What does she see for women's wrestling in the near future?
Definitely, it's on the up and up. You're absolutely right about that. There are so many promotions popping up, like Queens of Combat is just one of the many examples. So I think in the next couple of years, it'll be more about your technique and what kind of wrestler you are as opposed to how beautiful you are. I mean, of course, that helps, right? But, yeah, you're absolutely right. And that's actually going to be a really exciting thing to watch, especially for the fans, because they're going to get so much more out of women's divisions now compared to what they did before.
I agree. I mean, I hope we see a lot of great things coming out of women's wrestling in the near future. But Jonathan, you asked me to ask her about her bowling score, her bowling average, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I've heard that she is a huge fan of bowling, so I wanted to know what her best score was.
And right here at Another Wrestling Podcast, damn it, we're going to bring you the bowling question to Taylor Hendricks. Here you go.
Oh, your research team's pretty good. I won't tell you my average. It's like telling a girl her age now. My highest game is a 272, but I usually get close to 269.
Did you hear what she said? You have a pretty good research team.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Of course I heard that.
Yeah.
Well, hey, I mean...
AKA, she loves me.
She was a sweet girl. I wish her nothing but the best. Hopefully, you know, somebody picks her up full time and we'll see more of Taylor Hendricks, at least to your appeal and to Brian Wozniak out there who's listening to his appeal, because I know he's a big Taylor Hendricks fan. But none other than women's wrestling and divas that I get a chance to speak to, none other than the former diva Maria Kanellis. And Jonathan, do you know what's the most common question she's asked?
I mean, I have to assume that it's going to be something about her being in Playboy.
What is the most common question you get asked by pro wrestling fans?
About my Playboy. Was I insecure or was I afraid to do it? And I wasn't afraid. I wasn't scared. I made the decision as a mature woman, and I really am glad that I did it.
But she's more than just a Playboy magazine, Jonathan.
That's debatable.
Well, I also asked her, I told her, you know, for most people after they leave the WWE, they tend to struggle with life outside the WWE. But she seemed to have that opposite effect, and I asked her what has led her to being more successful since she has left the WWE.
I have a really good foundation. My family's amazing. My fiance, Michael Bennett, is amazing. And whenever I'm feeling like I'm struggling, I can always go to them. And I think that that's the biggest thing, is whether it's friends or family, if you have that support, you can accomplish anything. And I really think that there's so many more opportunities out there in this world that some people are too afraid to embrace. Like, I recently went back to school. I went back to a community college and started my degree, and then I'm finishing up at Johnson & Wales University to get my bachelor's degree. And I think for a long time, former entertainers were always afraid of making that leap. But there's great people now that I can look up to, like Deborah. She's getting her graduate's degree right now. And so there's others that are making that journey into other things.
I also asked her what would be her dream match if she ever had the chance to fight anybody in the world of pro wrestling.
Oh my goodness, that's a tough one. I'm a big fan of Killam Gillum. She was probably one of the toughest women ever. And I've met her family, and I would have loved to have wrestled her.
JB, do you know Killam Gillum?
I've heard of her, but I'm not so familiar with her work. I'm just a little disappointed that she didn't say Santina.
I mean, she, like, once again, another sweet girl, Maria. She's in ROH right now with her fiance Mike Bennett, and those two. I'm surprised that nobody else, or pretty much WWE, hasn't hired her back. Or him, quite frankly. And do you think it has to do with diva politics?
I we may at some point find out those answers. But I think that right now she's doing the best that she can in Ring of Honor. And her and Mike Bennett both, I wish them both the best of luck. And I think that we have not seen the last of them. And I would not be surprised if they pop up in WWE sometime soon.
Yeah, I mean, they're both entertaining to watch, and I wish her nothing but the best. But there's more to this show than just Maria and her Playboy, Jonathan. I also spoke to none other than Simon Dean, a.k.a. Nova. And do you know what Nova had to say? No, you don't, because I didn't get to it yet.
Nova, I don't.
Well, okay. basically, before we even got to any Simon Dean question, I pretty much asked him, being of ECW legacy, how do you feel that the fans still chant ECW in the arenas worldwide?
I think it's awesome, dude. I mean, you don't ever see anybody chanting WCW. That's not a shot at them. That's just reality. You know, you don't see fans that were from the UWA or Mid-South chanting. ECW is really one of the only promotions I ever saw where the fans chanted the initials of it, right?
Yep.
I wrestled in WWE too, and I never heard the people go, WWE, WWE. Number one, it would have sounded stupid, and number two, it just didn't happen. So I think it's amazing. It's a testament to the legacy. It is.
I'm so glad that you talked to him, but I really need you, if you talk to him again, I have not got a shipment of the Simon system in like 2 months, and I'm just really packing on the pounds, and I need some help. So Simon Dean, if you're listening, please help.
There you go. Well, I asked him next if he had to recruit 3 more members into the BWO, who would they be? Could you guess who Simon Dean's gonna? Do you know who Nova is gonna bring into the BWO if he had the chance?
That is a really good question. 3 people. I'm going to say the Iron Sheik. I'm going to say Roman Reigns. And I'm going to say Mikey from the Spirit Squad.
The most randomest. Good thing I didn't ask you this question.
Cause... Well, yeah, those are my answers. So.
Well, anyway, here's who Nova would have brought into the BWO.
Paul Nash and Hogan. Why not? You know what I mean? They're probably looking for work, so.
Well, looking for work, aren't they? Aren't they all? I mean, hey, what better answer than would you want right there? Hall, Nash, and Hogan.
Yeah, I'm kind of shocked by that, but I understand what he's saying because it was a big spoof on them, so it would have been funny to see like the NWO versus the BWO, I think.
Hey, they could still have it happen, and that's, you know, ECW second night only or something. I don't know. Maybe one day we'll see that. But I doubt it. But it's wishful Mark thinking anyway. So all you Marks out there who'd like to see this, there you go. Anyway, I did ask him a regular question, though. A regular serious question. That if he could change anything in the world of pro wrestling today, what would it be?
I wish there was more opportunities for the guys out there today. I don't do a lot of shows anymore. The ones that I do, there's a lot of talented wrestlers on it. I mean, between WWE and TNA, they roughly have, what, about 100 spots? So maybe it'll give or take some more. But for the most part, there's a lot of guys who aren't wrestling full-time somewhere because they just don't know where to go. So that stinks.
Yeah, I think he has a point there, Jonathan. I mean, I think that almost goes back to the question of brand separation. I think you have so many similar guys on the same shows. How do you feel? I mean, do you agree with him?
I do agree with him. And, you know, just in our neck of the woods, we live in the Northeast. There's a show every weekend. There's hundreds of shows every weekend, as a matter of fact. And let's just say that the top guy in each one of those independent promotions, they will never probably see mainstream success, and it's sad because if there was a way to put those guys on bigger shows, I think that everybody would win, because guys like Mike Bennett, like we were talking about earlier, he's a great wrestler, and if, you know, he may never make it to WWE, but he would definitely do well there, I think.
Yeah, definitely. It's a shame. I mean, you have a lot of spots to fill, and then a lot of these guys, you know, just become forever indie guys, and they never get a chance at the big time, and maybe one day that will change, who knows. But Nova, once again, man, great guy, thanks for joining us. And saving the main event for this show, I have none other than Jimmy Corderas, former WWE referee. I saved him as the main event because we never get to hear too much from referees out there, especially past WWE referees and recent past WWE referees. I wanted to know some questions about being a ref. My biggest question right now for him was, what was the greatest match you ever called?
For me, it's got to be WrestleMania 24, the main event, Edge and Undertaker. Little story there that I wasn't originally scheduled to referee that match. It was actually Edge and the Undertaker requested me for that match, which was a huge honor. And to me, to say that they have enough trust in me to actually want me in that match meant more to me than anything. And to be the main event, in the main event at WrestleMania, obviously, they're the ones that are drawing the tickets, but just to be a part of that, there's no greater feeling in the world.
I mean, what an awesome feeling to know that Edge and Undertaker personally requested you to be in this match. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, that's got to be ultimate for those referees. It's the show of shows for these guys, and you never really think about that. You just think that somebody backstage says, okay, you're going to do this and you're going to do that. So at that point, whenever The Undertaker, who is arguably one of the greatest WWE superstars of all times, if not pro wrestlers of all times, like, they're actually requesting you to be there, that's got to be, like, there can't be any bigger honor for those guys.
Yeah, definitely. And so my next question to him was, give me, like, you know, a day in the life of a referee. I mean, I told him to sum it up a little bit because I didn't want it to be too long, but I was kind of curious, you know, what does he do for the day? Because, you know, like, we know wrestlers, they'll show up, they'll either do autographs, they'll do some, you know, warm-up stuff, but what do the referees do? So I wanted to know what they do in the day of. So here, this is what he told me.
Yeah, for a lot of us, some of us also work ring crew as well, so you'd be pretty much the early guys to show up. You set up the ring. During the day, you'd kind of get together, find out what matches you had for the day. You kind of, you know, go over a few things with the guys and find out what's going on. You referee the show. Obviously, in between, somewhere during the day, you'd have to get something to eat.
Yeah.
And some guys would work out. Some guys would go for a little run, you know, keep the cardio up and stuff like that. You do the show. After the show, you tear everything back down. You're off to the next town. And that was pretty much the daily routine.
Well, how many, was it set to a limit? Like, you guys only allowed to do 3 matches tonight, or was there ever a limit, or it's just whatever they needed for?
No, it was pretty much random. It was like whoever made up the ref schedule would say, you know, Mike, Jimmy, whatever, and then they just go down the list, and it wasn't like you make sure that everybody has 3 matches or make sure everybody has 2 matches. It'd be like kind of go in order, and some guys would get 4, some guys would get 3. You know, it didn't matter.
So, I mean, I was kind of curious about that. I didn't know if, you know, they did anything different or outside the ordinary. So, I mean, it was kind of interesting. What I did find funny, though, is this next question, because I was curious if there's any funny stories that come to mind. And this one right off the bat is a classic story, and I didn't know about it, and I think it's just ridiculous.
Well, my first match at Maple Leaf Gardens in Toronto, and for those who don't know the, excuse me, the historic building, it's basically, we used to call it Madison Square Garden North. As a comparison, so it's the first match I referee at Maple Leaf Gardens, and I'm so excited, and I go down to count a fall, and my pants split wide open, and it's not just a little tear, I mean, it's like from the back belt loop all the way down into the to the crotch area. I mean, it's wide open, and I didn't know better at the time, so I was wearing like blue underwear. So you've got black pants and there's this big blue moon hanging out there. And I did my best to ignore it and continue with the match. But the worst part about it was, at the time, I didn't realize that you should have a backup pair of pants.
Yeah.
So I had to borrow a pair from one of the other referees who was a lot larger than I was. So the only thing missing for the second match I refereed that night was pretty much clown makeup and clown shoes, because these things were huge. But I learned a few lessons. Bring a backup pair of pants and wear black under your black pants.
Wow, I just learned a lot more about Jimmy Corderas' butt than I thought I was going to on this podcast.
I mean, that's one heck of a story, too. You don't think about the little things like that, where you should always wear black all underneath all your clothes and stuff. And I wonder if that matches anywhere we could find on YouTube. Maybe just send it to him for a throwback Thursday for him right there. But he's an interesting guy to talk to, because, I mean, he is the ref during these matches, and he knows stuff that we don't know. And, you know, it's just a different process than being a wrestler. So, and I also, you know, I asked him if there was any big match in the history of pro wrestling that he would have loved to have ref.
Ooh, tough one. There's so many classics. I'll give you 2 that come to mind right off the top of my head. Ric Flair, Ricky Steamboat, the match that they had in Chicago. Or actually, number 1 for me would be the first Undertaker Shawn Michaels match, which to me, I still rank that as the greatest WrestleMania match I've ever seen, and maybe the greatest match period that I've ever seen.
Now, do you remember what match he was talking about, the Ric Flair and Ricky Steamboat match?
I'm assuming he's talking about the Super Clash, but they wrestled like a million times against each other, and everybody, I mean, that's not that uncommon, I don't think, for people to have said that that's like one of the greatest matches. But I think that's cool. This is a kind of, you get to see a different side of these people because, like you said earlier, the referees really never get that much love. So it's nice to hear from these guys.
Yeah, and I mean, like I said, it's interesting because, you know, a lot of people talk about the Undertaker Shawn Michaels match, the first one, and just hearing it from them alone, too, you know, it's kind of interesting that they kind of agree or feel the same way about some of these matches that some of us marks out there love. But I also asked him, you know, his thoughts on the current WWE product as well.
I know there's a lot of criticism about them moving towards a PG product. I don't see it as full-on PG because I see some edgy stuff on there. And people clamor for the Attitude Era to come back. And you know what? We get little glimpses and pieces of the Attitude Era every once in a while. Like I look back to when Daniel Bryan got beat down by Triple H and that sort of stuff. So we get little glimpses and pieces. But when you, if you get that every week, then it doesn't become special anymore. I see the WWE nowadays as more of a, for lack of comparison, a variety show. You get a little bit of everything. You're going to get some good wrestling matches because they've got some good talent. You're going to get some comedy segments for a certain element of the audience. Sometimes they're funny, sometimes they're not. You know, it's hit and miss like any comedy. You get your divas, you're going to get your talking segments. So there's a little bit of everything for everybody. You can't please everybody, it's impossible. Yeah. So I try to always look at the glass half full and sit back and try to enjoy as much as I can. Like I said, obviously there's going to be stuff that might make me scratch my head a little bit, but at the same time, you know, there's going to be stuff that I'm going to like too.
I just want to thank Jimmy Corderas again. I mean, like I said, it was great talking to a ref, getting his point of views on some of these questions we had on, you know, what was the greatest match you ever refed and some funny stories. And it's great hearing from the referees as well. And that's who we want to get on the show. We want to get everybody involved in the world of pro wrestling. But that's it for this show, Jonathan. But I also spoke to another handful of select superstars, including Shelly Martinez, John Cena Sr., Tito Santana, The Hurricane Shane Helms, Jim the Anvil Neidhart, Bushwhacker Luke, and Matt Stryker. So like I said, it was a big weekend full of superstars, but we have more to come on the next episode.
Yeah, if you thought that the part one was amazing, then just wait until we hear from all those guys on part two. As always, it's towards the end of the show, we're starting to wrap things up, but if you're a listener who wants to be sponsored on our show, please just shoot us an email at anotherwrestlingpodcast@gmail.com, and we can get you on our show. And this week's episode of Another Wrestling Podcast was sponsored by People of Wrestling. Now, I don't know if any of you who are listening have seen People of Wrestling, but it's a hilarious idea where It's similar to the People of Walmart website, yes, where you can see some of the funniest fan pictures in all of professional wrestling. So follow them on Twitter at RealPOWrestling and like them on Facebook, www.facebook.com/peopleofwrestling.
That site is hilarious. I was just going through a bunch of those photos and I give some of these marks out there credit for what they put into the costume and whatnot. And some of these fans they just see at arenas. And I don't know, People of Wrestling is great to check out in your free time. I'm on it right now. So guys, check them out. They're our sponsor this week. Also, if you liked what you heard tonight, you can like us on Facebook at Another Wrestling Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at A Wrestling Pod. That's A Wrestling P-O-D. And you can find us on iTunes. We're on Stitcher. We're taking over the airwaves, Jonathan.
Absolutely. There's so much more to come from this show. We're just getting started, and we appreciate everybody who's already listening to us. Please tell your friends, tell your family. Take us with you on your way to work, and listen to us anytime you can.
That's it, man. And hey, every week, it's going to be
another wrestling podcast.